Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 58 of Cracking the Spine. I'm Sean.
I'm Zane.
Go ahead, Josh.
Anytime, Josh.
Whenever you're ready, Josh.
Hoo boy, Josh.
Whenever you're ready to leave your house and come do the podcast, because Josh isn't here this week.
Because he's a baby.
He's a big baby, and he needs to have his diaper changed, so it's going to take him the entire 40 minutes of the podcast. He couldn't make it. He's sick. So we're sending out...
Sick.
Sending out our condolences to his...
Yeah.
Estate. But we're here.
So you're welcome.
Doing our thing. You know.
Persevering.
Do you have a 58 joke? Because I couldn't come up with any.
No, I'm not good at the number jokes.
You're good at everything.
That's really not true.
Totally
but,
true.
But thank you.
You're good at a lot of things. But number, I guess number jokes is one of them. 58. It'll come to me. Call me later.
Definitely.
Yeah. If Josh was here, he'd know.
He would
know. He'd have one. We should probably text him during the break and see if he has one.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Zane, what are you reading?
I finished books 1 through 3 of Books of Blood.
How were they? I mean, was it worth your, like...
Yeah, I mean, it's they're really good horror stories. I kind of wish it was, like, October.
Yeah, okay.
It's just not my favorite format of a book. It's short stories.
Collections of short stories. Yeah. Is it three different stories, or is each Book of Blood have, like...
Each Book of Blood is a collection of short stories.
Gotcha. All right. So it's like three collections of short... Oh, yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But I felt really obligated to read it since someone was nice enough to anonymously send me the book.
Okay.
I didn't want to, like, not read it.
Shout out to whoever you are sending books anonymously.
It was super cool. All
right.
So I wanted to read that. And then I was going to start Don't You Cry by Mary Kubica, which is the book that you gave
me. Something I gave you a little while ago. Yeah.
Which, I'll be honest, doesn't look...
Yeah.
Like, it's gonna be awesome, and now there's, like, no chance of me reading it, because you just gave me the new Paul Tremblay.
Disappearance at Devil's Rock.
Yeah, which I just started while I was waiting for you to finish up.
All right.
So
here we are.
So here we are.
Now you know the rest of Zane's night.
Sean, what are you reading?
Yeah, thanks, Zane.
Josh wasn't here.
Josh,
what are you reading? No,
exactly the same.
Okay, Sean,
exactly
what are you
the
reading?
Same as though Josh were here. Nothing. I was busy. Getting sick. I finished, obviously, Disappearance at Devil's Rock.
Yeah.
Which by Paul Tremblay, which I gave Zane, if you were listening about a minute ago.
Here's the play-by-play.
He
handed it to me. I opened it up.
It's good.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, I mean, A, because it's not going to be out until June, but also because you're literally just starting it.
Yeah.
I don't really want to say a lot about it. But it's good. If you liked Head Full of Ghosts, you'll like this.
Yeah.
It's got that same sort of, like, feel to it.
Yeah.
And then I just started a book that was sent to me this week called I'm Thinking of Ending Things by Ian Reid. And it was described as, it says, in this deeply suspenseful and irresistibly unnerving debut novel, a man and his girlfriend are on their way to a secluded farm. When the two take an unexpected detour, she is left stranded in a deserted high school, wondering if there's any escape at all. What follows is a twisted unraveling that will haunt you long after the last page is turned. So it's coming out in June, and they're saying it's going to be like the psychological thriller of the summer.
Okay.
So I'm giving it a shot. I'm only, I just started it during my break. I'm like 25 pages into it. It's all right. I mean, nothing much has happened yet. A little bit of flashback stuff, but nothing really.
Okay.
Like she's narrating the book. The girlfriend is narrating the book.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was something I wanted to bring up from last week that we didn't get to that I can't believe that we didn't get to when we were talking about scripts and reading them and plays and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is the new Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Which will be out at the end of July.
Yeah.
And is going to be just a play script.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed that Josh isn't here because I know you were going to read it anyway. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's got Harry Potter attached to it. So,
yeah.
And you don't mind reading plays. I mean, it's not your favorite, like you said, but you don't mind it. But I would like to know, maybe we'll try to remember to ask him again next week, if I haven't fired him. He gets fired from podcasts, it's a thing.
It's a thing.
To see if he would be interested in reading it, you know?
Yeah, like, I would be willing to bet that Josh reads it and isn't happy about it.
Right.
You know, like, he'll read it so that he's caught up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's, that he's, like, current.
I feel like that's
gonna
why I'm going to read it.
A butthead about it the whole time.
It seems an odd choice to me. that she would
novelize it. I think it's sort of like, it was intended to be a play from the beginning, and this is a way for people to access it.
Right.
You know, it's just to, like,
do you think she originally, like, had planned to publish it, or do you think she was, like, kind of, like, strong-armed into doing it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
We should see if we can get her on the show.
Yeah.
Right after the week
when
we get Chuck
Tingle. Really easy to get in touch with her.
She's on Twitter?
She is on Twitter. That's true, actually. And she does talk to people on Twitter.
We can get that Microsoft bot to tweet at her.
the sexist...
Yeah, the Hitler bot.
Hitler bot, yeah.
Just in case you don't know what we're talking about, you probably do by now because it's been about a week since it happened. But there was a... Microsoft created this, like, new AI Twitter bot.
And it was supposed to be, like, a young teen,
supposed to be a teenage girl who would, like, adapt her, like, writing style.
No, in all the articles that I read about this, the information that I couldn't find was, like, how does she, like, I'm guessing, unfortunately, that she, like, learns from reading other people's tweets.
I'm pretty,
like,
sure that's exactly
what she should be tweeting about.
I think that's exactly
and
what
so
happens.
Of course it devolved into, like,
she was tweeting, like, Hitler was right and, like, I hate it, like, black people, like, it was
the tweet I saw was like, Hitler was right, Jews are evil. I was like, oh my god. That's so on the nose. It's not even, like, vaguely in
no
support
yeah
of Hitler.
So many of them were like, one of them was like,
awful.
Like, do you, like, someone tweeted it to her, like, do you support Donald Trump? And she was like, read my lips. Yes, I do. It was like, what the fuck?
That's funny, at least.
And, like, you would think that in the wake of, and did you see the British crowdsourcing the name of the boat, the expedition boat?
Yeah, Bodie McBoatface.
Bodie McBoatface. You would think
in the wake
of Bodie McBoatface, you would learn, like, maybe we shouldn't trust the internet to help us make things anymore, because then you end up with Bodie McBoatface and a racist AI teen girl.
I think Bodie McBoatface is not that bad.
I think that for a $200 million, research vessel, not from my point of view, but from the people who, like, built this ship, like,
I think it's pretty harmless, considering that it was probably either that or being named, like, the USS, like, Patriot or something.
Well, it's British, but, like,
well, whatever.
Or, like,
you know what I mean?
Lord,
like,
Lord Byron's Wang or something. Yeah, I guess you could do worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, long...
That one is harmless.
Pleasant trips, Bodie McBoatface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bon voyage.
There it is. All right. Cool. We're going to do another listener suggestion today, and Josh can't be here to do the klaxon. Maybe I'll sample it from another show. But we'll get into it right after this. Sean.
Josh sucks.
Yeah, you suck, Josh. You'll never hear this anyway.
He's getting fired tomorrow.
Yeah. Come back next week. No Josh.
So today we're talking about, like, narration and perspective in all books. Right. And a couple different people asked us to talk about this. The first one was at LM Beck 10, who asked us, what is your favorite? All right. See, we don't need him.
Yeah,
we don't need him.
All right.
Yes, yeah, so what is your favorite type of narrator? Unreliable, all-knowing, Game of Thrones style, where it's multiple perspectives, etc.
Okay.
And then on Reddit, Reddit user, I am Carl Gregory.
It's
good.
It's not great.
It's not like Josh. I feel like it's kind of getting better, though.
Thank you.
Said, I'd be very interested to hear the CTS team's thoughts on perspective in books.
That's cracking the spine.
What?
Yeah, it's us.
First person versus third person, is one better than the other? Do you have favorite examples? Do people even write books in second person? Does the team, that's us, prefer omniscient perspectives or limited, and how does that affect the story?
It's a lot to get to. It's a lot to cover, I think.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say, like, I think one works better than the other.
Yeah, I feel they both asked us that. Like, to pick one?
Yeah, I can't
and
pick
I feel
one.
Like, that's weird. It's very dependent on, like, the quality of the writing.
And the story being told. Like, what kind of story am I supposed to be reading? Like, if, you know, if Josh was here, It's an easy question for Josh because Josh reads nonfiction and history.
Right.
And unless you're talking about like an autobiography, it's almost always written in a third person perspective. Like there's just not a way to write history from a first person point of view.
Right.
Unless you're telling your memoir.
Yeah.
So like I think we're specifically talking about fiction.
Fiction. Yeah.
So it's good that Josh isn't here. But it's really, 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 really good that Josh isn't here.
Whoa.
No, I'm just saying it's great that he's not here. It's better when he's not here. again, he'll never hear that. you know, I don't think it's an either or. I think it depends on the story.
Yeah.
Like there are certain stories, like American Psycho.
That was the one that I thought of.
Could not be written in any other way other than first person.
It's so brilliant to have it be in first person because you have to see the world and the other characters through his eyes.
Right.
And in that way, it's very unreliable. And especially as you get towards the end of the book and it's like, wait, what?
It starts getting surreal. Like, yeah.
Is this real? Is this not real? Like, it's very important that you be in his shoes so that you feel that.
And you can't get away from it. Like, you can't, right. There's no, like, oh, maybe in the next chapter we'll jump to right. somebody else.
There's no voice of reason.
Right, exactly. It's purely being in his brain.
Yeah.
And, like, for a story like there's no other way to make that work.
Absolutely not.
But, like, I don't know, there's a million other stories that, like Shawshank Redemption short story is also written first person.
Right.
Which is from the point of view of Red. It's Red telling the story of his friend Andy. But I think that's a story that sort of could be adapted to be like the film, you know? Like the film is right. very clearly, you know, you don't get a whole lot of first person movies.
No.
Like there's that one coming up soon, which Hardcore Harry, I think it's called. That shot like a first person shooter.
Oh.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for me. Ugh. But like that's what you're talking about.
I guess, yeah.
Or like, you know, like a VR kind of situation.
Yeah.
But like I don't have a preference.
I definitely don't have a preference.
It's a very rare situation where I'll be reading along in a book and think to myself, boy, this would be better if it was, you know, if I'm reading a third person omniscient.
Yeah.
This would be better if it was for being told in the first person.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think I've said this on the show in the past, I really don't like unreliable narration.
Yeah, you have mentioned that.
And it's becoming, you know, because of the success of certain titles, it's becoming right. much more prevalent, and like everyone's rushing out with one.
Right.
Doesn't do much for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It depends on, like, effectiveness. You
right.
know, like, there are definitely times where I don't know that I necessarily stop and I'm like, I wish this was written in a different perspective.
Right.
But I don't know. I can't even think of a specific example, but I do know that there's been times where I'm like, it maybe would have been nice to like get a read on what's actually going on, or like, I wish that I didn't have that insight into that character. Like that character might've been more interesting if I didn't know exactly what was going on in his brain.
Right.
You know, like sometimes that
happens. You mean like from a first person perspective or like an omniscient third person narrator?
Both.
Okay.
Like sometimes it's like, oh, I wish that was kind of a mystery, you know,
yeah.
or like whatever. But it's usually, I chalk that up less to like the type of perspective being used and more just the quality of the writing. Like,
right, right.
Does the story, like you said, like does the story demand it? Does the story demand that it be told in a certain perspective?
And I wonder like from a writer's standpoint, at what point you make the decision to you know, write it in either third person or first person? Does the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, is there a first draft of The Shawshank Redemption from Stephen King that has it being told third
yeah.
person, you know, I don't
That's
know how many iterations, like, I don't know, having never written a novel myself,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the thought process is like, okay, I need to tell this story from the point of view of the main character, or...
Yeah, I wonder if, I am not a writer, but I feel like as soon as I get the idea for a story, I'd be like, well, it's told in this voice.
Right.
Like, this is who's telling me that story. I feel like it would just be obvious from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know.
And the second person thing, I mean, you know, you've got your choose your own adventure, right? Like
definitely choose your own adventure. I did a little bit of research because I wanted to know.
This is going to be a short show, I feel like.
Probably.
Josh, we miss you.
We like different perspectives. The end.
Yeah, right? There's a lot of different ways to read a book.
The first story that I thought of that was written in second person is a Ray Bradbury short story called The Night.
Oh, all right.
And it's written... like, you are a little boy, and your mother asks you to go down to the store and pick up a pint of ice cream, and like, and it's very, very effective, but it's Ray Bradbury, and also it's short,
right,
which I feel like probably helps, because I don't know, being told over and over again, like, you are doing this thing,
right.
I don't know, like, in a long form that I could tolerate something like that. I feel like it would get repetitive really quickly. But there are, weirdly, either there's not a lot of novels that are written in the second person perspective, or no one has been interested to compile a list. One of the two. There are a handful. The one that keeps coming up is Bright Lights, Big City by Jay McInerney.
McInerney. I think it might be McNerney. McInerney. Yeah, I know.
I'm pretty sure it's MCI.
It is. It's MC capital I.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how he pronounces it. I've read a couple of his books, but I never read Bright Lights. He was part of that same like literary circle with Bret Easton Ellis.
And, yeah.
Like, the late 80s
yeah.
drug, like cocaine.
So I've never read that novel, obviously. Although it gets very good word of mouth.
I've seen the film. The film's great.
To be very good.
Kiefer Sutherland, Michael J. Fox.
All right.
Right?
Sounds good. But that's the one that keeps, like, coming. I mean, there's a couple others, but that's the one that, like, kept coming up repeatedly.
I didn't realize that was written in the second person.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, to answer, I am Carl Gregory's question. Yes, novels are written in second person, although there's probably some debate. To what level of
effectiveness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It's weird to constantly be told, you are doing this.
Right.
Like, it lends a very specific tone to a novel.
Well, it feels very gimmicky. It feels very like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write the great American novel in second person.
Yeah.
And your editor goes, okay, go ahead. We already gave you the advance.
Sounds like something that comes up a lot in like a creative writing college class.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I don't know where this would fall. I guess it kind of falls into the third person, but I was thinking specifically of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
Which is written entirely as, it's like journal entries.
Yeah.
And letters.
Yeah.
And psychiatrist notes. Like, there's no hard and fast narrative in that book.
Right.
So some of it is first person, because some of it's like, you know, Jonathan Harker writing a letter to Mina, like, about his experience.
It's like an oral history.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to say it. So yeah, there's that. There's World War Z, which is also an oral history.
Right.
Like a compilation of newspaper clippings and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's a different, I mean, I guess technically that's like a mix of third and first person.
Yeah. When I saw the question, do people even write books in second person? I was like, yeah, Percy being a wallflower. And I was like, no, that's not second person, because you are not like that.
I've never read it.
Narrator, but it's written as letters.
Okay.
So the main character, Charlie, is writing letters to you, the reader. And you are a specific person in his world, but he doesn't name you.
That's what I was going to ask. So it's not like, it's written to Charlie's friend.
Right. And he's like, I heard that you're a friend. I heard that, like, you would be willing to read these letters and stuff. And I want to tell you about what's going on with my life. And it's never specified who you are, what your gender is, or even what your relation is, just that Charlie had heard about you.
Right.
And that it was okay to write you letters, so it's like a safe space for writing letters. But consequently, it's like, you wouldn't believe what happened today.
Right.
It's like, that's definitely not second person, but it's kind of like, it's a weird,
it's like a mix.
Yeah, it's like a weird first person.
Back to that creative writing, like, experimental kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's very effective within that book, but
there's a novel I really like called Set This House in Order by Matt Ruff, which is told from first person point of view, but the main character has multiple personality disorder.
Right.
So there's like, I think, 9 different people living in this one person's like head. And the author creates, like, a literal house, like a visualization. Think like that movie Inside Out, like a visualization of his thought process that's a house.
Right.
Because he's been through so much therapy that he knows that, like, that's a way to control, like, so there's the father figure character, and there's a big, like, pedestal where whoever has control of the body stands in the pedestal.
Right.
And that's how the story is told when that person is taking over. And it's an interesting way to do it. So it's like, it's first person, but it's like several different characters being the first person.
Yeah.
So again, like, it's a weird to me, it's a weird question. Like, I don't want to, like, diminish the contributions of the audience.
Both people.
Right, of our listeners. But, like, it seems an odd question to ask, do you have a preference? Yeah. And I guess, once again, like we do a lot, I kind of want to flip it back out onto people listening and say, like,
do they have a preference?
Should we have a preference? Yeah. Do you have a preference? How did you decide? Like, how do you decide? If you start reading a book, it's in first person. Are you going to be like, nah, no thanks, I'm done?
Yeah, is that a thing?
I don't know.
Do people get that way? I'm not like.
I mean,
that.
I give up on books, but I don't think it's based on
definitely not the on
the voice
narrative.
Of the narrator. Well, I mean, some, you know, sometimes with the unreliable narrator, I'll give up.
Right.
But that's just more. I don't like being told things that like happen in a blackout drunk. It does, right. It's like too much for me.
It's like a red herring thing. Yeah. It's like, it's this way. Nope. It's not.
And it's like that's not a. That's not.
It's
necessary.
Not even a twist. It's, right. You're just being lied to.
Yeah, yeah. Which we again we've hit on that before.
I was definitely. I think. I don't know. I kept thinking about the way that Harry Potter is told, which is definitely third person, but we have like a special insight into Harry's mind,
right?
And we don't necessarily get that insight into the other characters.
So it's like a limited omniscience,
right?
Yeah.
Which I like because we get to see like Harry's observations on the other characters and how he feels about them. So we know him really, really well as the main character, but we're not limited to only seeing things from his perspective.
Right.
And obviously like that's not exclusive to Harry Potter.
No, definitely.
It's a good
yeah.
example of that kind of narration, which I definitely enjoy. I don't know that I would go so far as to say that it's my favorite, but it's I like reading because I'm so into like world building and stuff like that. I like reading that type of narration where I really get a lot of insight into the world. Like I do like omniscient narrators where it's like I just want to know what's going on in this world. I want to know more about it. I want to know details about stuff. Like, I think that's why something like Lord of the Rings is really,
right.
It's engrossing because you, all that information is available to you because of the type of narration.
That book I was talking about a couple weeks ago that I finished called Black Chalk is told. So it's like, it's present times. And then like, 15, 20 years ago when they were all still in college, like all the main characters were in college together.
Right.
And it's interesting because the stuff that's set in modern, like the today stuff is written first person. One of the characters is telling you his story.
Right.
But all the flashback stuff turns into third person. And I've seen that happen a lot too.
Right.
Where you sort of switch back and forth to like, to serve the needs of the story.
Yeah.
And it has to be, again, like everything else that we're talking about tonight, it has to be used correctly and effectively in order to be successful, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Well, I was also thinking about The Fireman by Joe Hill,
right.
Where, like, the narrator definitely knows a lot of things that we don't know, because we get to the end of a chapter and it's like, except
right.
She wouldn't live
wouldn't
to see
her
that
again.
Day,
yeah.
Or whatever,
yeah.
You know, and that kind of omniscience when it's used that way to like intrigue me and
like
you're like
suspense.
Wait what
yeah.
Like that's really effective. But then there's also sometimes, you know, where the narrator knows too much and it's like, can't this just be a mystery
right.
to me
right.
Like
you play all your cards right away
yeah.
And it's like, why am I still reading
yeah. Which we got a question about prologues on Twitter
yeah the Bram Stoker's Dracula thing.
Right
yeah
which I feel like that I kept thinking about that question about prologues because the question was do they ever, like, give too much away?
Do you skip... Well, the question was, do you ever skip the prologue for fear that it's going to give too much away?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think in some cases, like, if the narrator knows too much and they, like, make it very known that they know too much, it's like, oh, come on, man. Like,
right.
Let me figure that out. Like, I don't necessarily like being told something outright, especially if the book is supposed to be a little bit of, like, a mystery. If you're supposed to go, what?
Well, yeah, because otherwise, what's the point? You know, why,
right.
Like, why go through the process of reading
yeah.
it? Yeah.
So I definitely read prologues, but I understand.
I understand. The
I understand what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like reading a prologue, and then you get to that point in the book later, and you're like, yeah, but I already read this part.
Right.
Like, I already knew that this was going to happen. Like, does it set you up, or does it just kind of set you up for like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Here
it's
we
like,
are.
That reminds me. I don't know if I told this story on the show before. You probably heard this story before, but the first time I ever saw Reservoir Dogs, I was a freshman in college, and there's the opening, like, walk where all the characters walk up, are, like, walking up the street, and Little Green Bag is playing.
Right.
And all I knew from, like, hearing about Reservoir Dogs was there was a character named Mr. Blonde.
Right.
And so, like, they're walking down the street, and Tim Roth's character came on. Like, it was like the, it was the still the single shot of Tim Roth, and it said Tim Roth. And I turned to my roommate and I was like, "Is that Mr. Blonde?" And he goes, "No, that's the cop." And I was like, "Okay, all right." Because, like, at that point in the movie, like, I still didn't know that that anything was being spoiled for me.
Right.
But I've never been able to see Reservoir Dogs Pure because, like, right away he's like, "That's the cop." I was like, "Oh, okay." And then it was like, "Oh." Like, later on, I was like, "Wait a minute. You just told me the whole goddamn movie."
That sucks.
So it was like, you know, it's like that idea. Like, I got it ruined in the prologue.
Yeah.
But I brought it on myself, but yeah. So, I don't know.
That's really funny.
Little personal anecdote there. All right. Well, yeah, I guess we're gonna have to break early, because...
Yeah.
We got it. We did it. We're doing it.
No problem.
Josh missed it. We see how much more efficient we can be without
we
Josh?
We are very streamlined
it's
without
really
Josh
It's really good
here.
That Josh isn't
yeah.
here.
Yeah. It's kind of awesome.
We'll be right back. Segment 3 of episode 58 of Cracking the Spine. Still Sean.
Still Zane.
So we've got some letters to get to from our fan mailbag, of which Zane is going to have an opinion.
Yeah, I do. I have opinions on things. We got an email from Jay Houston. It like teetered out at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, my voice cracked.
You like start strong.
I was hitting puberty or something. Yeah. I'm trying, Zane.
He said, hey, y'all, all the Voldemort talk in episode 54 when we accused everyone of turning into Voldemorts.
Everyone was turning into Voldemorts.
Everyone.
The accusations were warranted.
It's a slippery slope.
Exactly.
All the Voldemort talk in episode 54 reminded me of that one time a bit ago when J.K. Rowling said that the T in Voldemort was silent and made everyone question themselves but also question Miss Rowling as to why she hadn't said anything before and why even now, way after the 7th book and 8th film... She didn't say anything. I just wanted to bring up a potential topic, it being, have you ever experienced a similar happening occurrence with an author, writer, creator you follow where they seemingly want to try to change the past in their work, no matter how insignificant the change is? And he used that as an example and like kind of changing your views of characters like in Go Set a Watchman.
Right.
And
which I think, by the way, I think that is a topic that we can get into. Because there's some stuff I have to say
yeah.
about that too.
But then... he said, going back to the Voldemort thing, maybe she just said that to troll us or something. I don't know. But then again, maybe it was something she felt needed to be addressed, even after so many years of not speaking up and letting society slash pop culture think they're pronouncing this character's name right. I mean, you had 7 books and 8 movies to say something, lady. The least you could have done is not waited until after the whole thing was over. Or maybe you could have not said anything at all and just accepted it. We might not even be having this discussion if you just got it right the first time. I mean, come on, Rowling.
Well, here we go.
So I definitely had an opinion
about
this.
Sky went after J.K. Rowling. Go ahead, Zane.
Because I remember when she said this, and to be fair to J.K. Rowling, what she said was that her intention was that Voldemort be pronounced with a soft T. So it'd be Voldemort.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically it got like Americanized.
Okay.
And everyone pronounced it Voldemort. And she basically just brought this up like, that was my intention, but it got changed. I don't really care.
Right.
So it seems weird that that got singled out. I think that's why it bothered me, because it seems weird that like somehow this ruined everything for Jay Houston. Sorry. that like he's been pronouncing it wrong. I think as a writer, like especially she deals with a lot of kind of gibberish words and weird gibberish names. So, like, they're going to get, like, people are not necessarily going to pronounce them the way that she intended.
And not everybody's going to pronounce them the same.
Well, you don't have, like, especially me as an American, like, I don't really have a touchstone for how you would pronounce something like Voldemort. So,
right.
To me, an American, it comes out Voldemort.
Right.
I'm not going to look at that and go, definitely Voldemort.
And it becomes a thing, you know, like, if 10 people you talk to about the book, I'll call them Voldemort.
Yeah.
You're not going to be like, excuse me.
Yeah.
It's Voldemort.
Well, and at some point, like, again, I don't know, like, because it's a written medium, like,
yeah.
She doesn't necessarily come right out and say, like, introduce these characters to you. I mean, I even remember...
With, like, phonetic spellings in parentheses.
I mean,
yeah.
Honestly, I remember being 11 and reading the book for the first time and going, like, what is that name? Hermione?
Right.
Hermione?
Right.
I had never seen that name before, and I did not know how to pronounce it. And I pronounced it Hermione in my head for a year or two until someone corrected me.
Didn't I say Bellatrix the other day on the
show? Yes,
the,
you
did. A couple
did.
Weeks ago on the show? Cause, yes. Because that's how I read it. I don't know. Because
that's how you read it. And that happens to me a lot in books, especially reading like science fiction and fantasy and stuff. Like, if I've never seen it before, like, I'm just going to pronounce it a certain way in my head. And she definitely, I know she's gotten a lot of criticism for, because she, J.K. Rowling, knows so much about these worlds that she's created, and there's a lot more to the worlds than she has put down on paper for us, the readers. She has a lot of insight into characters that we don't necessarily. So when she says stuff like, well, my intention was for Dumbledore to be gay, people are like, why do you even need to say it?
Right.
Like, well, because that's the way that she envisioned
it. It's her
it.
World. She can say
it's
whatever
her
the
world.
Hell she
and
wants.
That's kind of how I feel about, like, the Voldemort thing. Like, I don't think she said it to be like, you fucking assholes, you've been pronouncing it wrong all these years. I think she just said it to, like, that was my intention. It kind of got bastardized. Whatever.
Right.
Like, if she was really adamant about it, she was very involved in production on the films. That's
right. She could have corrected it at any point. Yeah.
Yeah. And she didn't. I think it was sort of an afterthought. So.
All right. So take that, Jay.
Yeah. Take that.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah.
All right. You know, get at us, crackingthespineshow@gmail.com.
Tell us, do you have a favorite perspective?
Because
apparently that's a thing.
Maybe we could start a thread about it on the Reddit.
Yeah, do that.
r/crackingthespinepod. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know how to get at us. We're accessible.
Definitely.
Even when Josh sometimes is too, when he's alive and functioning.
Yeah. Not very
Josh.
Often.
Josh. Right. But it's nice. It's good. It smells better.
It definitely smells better.
Oh, we did. Actually, maybe we should back off because somebody on Twitter this week did tell us that we have to be nicer to Josh.
Fuck that. Fuck that.
Yeah, especially since the guy who said that to us, his avatar picture on Twitter is a goddamn Tom Brady jersey. I'm not going to do anything anybody in a Patriots jersey ever asks me to do.
Ooh,
ever.
The ire's up here.
I mean, cracking
the spine this week.
And then Josh like rushes to this guy's defense. Little does he know, it's a Patriots fan. Like, come on.
Damn.
Right? All right.
Damn.
That's enough.
Whoa.
Shut it down. We'll talk more next week.
Goodbye.